There's a cartoon I saw many years ago. It's a school of fish swimming deep in the ocean, and you see one of the fish says, "Are we there yet?" So as we reflect on this path, this Eightfold Path that the Buddha walked before us, we can recognize the forward-leading nature of it. We may be inspired by the idea of complete freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion. Maybe we may be inspired by a heart that loves unrestricted. That loves like the sun, just, it has no boundaries. And, as we're all sitting here, I think it's been about 12 days that we've been here together. Moment by moment, we've been opening to our experience. And we might connect with the name of one of my favorite names of a book. It's I Came As Being Nobody, Going Nowhere. And it's with both these ideas of being forward leading and going nowhere, that our practice dances with that. We allow ourselves to be inspired by the forward leading nature of the path, and we allow ourselves to be fully, like Gil said, fully an A, going nowhere, being nobody. Being nobody allows us to really explore what nobody's like. So, and I wanted to talk about the difference between aspiration and striving. And it's a quality that has caused me a lot of suffering on many retreats. Well, striving is not aspiration. And the difference between them, right? They both are trying to get somewhere, but the difference is dukkha. Aspiration is brings a lightness of the heart, a happiness, a joy. Striving is a contraction. It might be a determination, but it's a grim determination. There's a closed, a little closed feeling to it. And what I found is that striving, for me, it always includes the delusion that what really counts is coming up. And at this moment isn't quite enough. It's not quite right this moment, right? When I was in school, through, I hate to say most of my school life, I was spend much of my time bored. And I would be very, very deeply contemplate the clock. Just waiting for that bell to ring, just waiting for it to ring. Once this class is over, I'll be happy, right? Once it's over. And to sometimes that when I found myself echoing that sentiment sitting in the meditation hall, I was a little bit dismayed. Waiting for the bell, then everything will be okay. Sometimes, people come, for their meetings with me, and they're this is called an experienced student retreat, and they're kind of embarrassed to say that they've been waiting for the bell, right? Because experienced students don't do that ever, right? Once I spent, when I finished school, I was finally done with school. I was so glad to, just begin to enter my work life. And then I found myself waiting for the weekend. And I'd noticed myself, going to go visit a friend. It's like maybe a long ride, about an hour, waiting to get there, waiting to get there. And, striving has a contraction, right? That waiting to get there, as opposed to, oh, I can't wait to see my friend. It feels so, I'm so happy. You know, such a difference in that state of mind. You know, one of the things that, you know, I was apologizing to someone for, you know, one of my Dharma colleagues, you know, for keeping them waiting for so long, you know, and they said, oh, that's fine, meditators don't wait, you know, so. So maybe you've been connecting with an aspiration, you know, in your own practice, a lightness of heart. You know, maybe you felt it, you know, when you signed up for this retreat. If other things didn't show up, though, but you know, so these, you know, thinking of someone we love can lift the heart. You know, thinking of going out and walking around the grounds. It lifts my heart. But really what we're referring to is the aspiration on this path, the aspiration to freedom, the aspiration to just setting down the holding, that the wanting, the not wanting, the delusion, just that setting that down. How wonderful. What an amazing thing to be able to do that. You know, the image that I like to keep is like climbing a mountain, you know, with the aspiration to get to the top. And, you know, maybe we're inspired by the panorama we imagine at the top. You know, it's kind of, you know, really wonderful. But as we walk on the steep incline, you know, we can be fully there and appreciate the beautiful scenery there. We can appreciate our bodies there. And when there's a rock or a boulder ahead of us, we have to climb up over it. You know, the boulder isn't wrong for being there. You know, and how many boulders do we climb over, right? You know, symbolically within us. You know, they're not wrong for being there. They're just boulders. So what I want to point to, you know, is like sometimes, you know, on the path or climbing up the mountain, you know, there's these things that happen, right? Or body aches, you know, I'm sure you've all had experiences where your body's tired of working so hard and the feet get tired, but we continue on the path and we don't leave our feet behind, right? You know, we bring all of who we are up the mountain. All of who we are. And, you know, sometimes it's a steep climb, sometimes, you know, it's downhill, it's a delight, and that inspires us. But we bring all of us, you know, the delight and the part that's kind of painful going up. Yeah. And of course, we can climb that mountain out of a determination, I'm going to get to the top and I can do it, you know, but from a contracted space. Either way, our body shows up there, but we're in very different universes. You know, when I first began to meditate regularly, you know, I really believed that my biggest strength was striving. I thought, you know, I can do this, you know, I can force myself to do this, and you know, and then I'd start to concentrate and it just didn't work. You know, it just didn't work. I just worked so hard, you know, but I stayed on my breath the full hour. What happened? What's wrong? You know, and you know, one of my teachers finally, you know, took a while. They finally told me that the precursor for concentration is contentment. Yeah, and then I tried really hard to get content. And yeah, it took me a while to just find contentment in just ease, you know, in ease, just a little bit of ease, not so complicated. So being nobody, going nowhere, is fully being fully here, You know, being here without conditions, just what's here. We don't need anything different. Nothing has to change. It will, but it doesn't have to. You know, nothing has to happen. Aspiration to freedom, on the other hand, it guides us to keep choosing what's wholesome, to keep going forward on the path and not going down one of those little nooks, you know, so that you're lost when it gets dark, you know, so just keep going and always choosing the wholesome. And it'll gladdens the heart, you know, and you know, and at times, you know, in practice, you know, we may feel discouraged or complacent, you know, and it's really helpful to connect with our deepest aspiration, however we touch into that. I mean, for myself, you know, I learned to, I don't have it on my calendar or anything, but, you know, at around once a year or so, you know, I take a little bit of time to just connect with my deepest aspiration. It's always the same in essence, but it always has a different flavor, you know, and it's sort of beautiful for me to do that. It's just a little bit different each time, you know, and I find that it helps me keep that close to my heart. There's something more fresh about it each year. You know, and of course, you know, when we're striving, you know, when that conditioning kicks in and we start leaning forward, you know, we can just remember, you know, we're going nowhere, and it helps bring us back to balance. You know, and it's somewhere like between these two, you know, it's like a dance that we do between those two, you know, neither. They're a little bit of opposites, and, you know, for me, like when things are opposite and they're both true, you know, that's somewhere the truth lies in between somewhere. There's something very sweet about that, not quite rational spot where, you know, being fully in A transforms into being in B. My first memory of what to me felt like the beginning of my spiritual path, you know, and I was a child, and I was laying on the windowsill, and we were on the second floor, and there's a little balcony, okay, so laying on the windowsill and looking at the stars at night, you know, and I was just looking, oh, I wonder what the farthest star is, you know, trying to see how as far as I could see. And then it struck me, what's beyond that one? And what's beyond that one? And it just shocked me. It just shocked me. You know, it's like I lost trust in the rational mind at that moment. You know, I just knew in my heart that my rational mind would never figure it out. That it wasn't going to happen. My parents weren't going to help with that. I could tell. You know, I trusted my ability to reason enough to know that. And that really moved me in my life to seek out, how do I deal with that? You know, how do I deal with that uncomfortable reality of the limit of the rational mind? Which is really clear in practice. You know, I've practiced a lot in my own practice with a lot of physical pain, you know, and I still remember one of my early retreats, you know, just kind of agonizing over it, and the teacher saying with all this joy in his heart, you know, oh, anicca, impermanence, everything passes, you know, and yeah, but that didn't help much, you know, that didn't help much, and there was no thinking around the pain, there was no way to figure it out. It was really about finding out how I'm adding suffering to what's painful. You know, that the simple pain, which might be really unpleasant, is very different than everything we add to it. Like, what's it going to be like an hour from now? What if it gets worse? And all the things we add to it. Oh, I can't do my practice till the pain goes away. I can't practice. And I couldn't rationalize my way out of it, you know. And it took me quite a while to begin to turn to the parts of myself that kept saying, this is my pain, my suffering, you know, mine. And to be able to start looking at it, you know, with a little bit of spaciousness, you know, a little bit of spaciousness, lots of compassion. Now, we can't think our way to freedom. We can't rationalize our way to freedom. You know, many of us habitually reject parts of ourselves or obsess on what we see are our faults. We tend to give our imperfections a lot of meaning. And the example I often go to, you know, and from personal memory, and, you know, when we're teenagers, you know, and you take the teenager who has like this a beautiful face, you know, and then they have this little tiny pimple right there. And, you know, in their mind, when they look in the mirror, they're 95% pimple, right? And this is what we often do with our imperfections. You know, and we obsess on them, you know, that this is, we make them so big. And in terms of awareness, those imperfections, no matter what they look like, are actually no more different than the sensations in our big toe, the sensations in our hands. It's just what's there. It's not my imperfection, it's just the way this conditioned self showed up at this moment in time. But you know, it's habitual mind, the habits of mind keep going back to that. And each time we see it clearly, we weaken the grip. You know, some years back, I had a student I was working with who was, she was very, very disciplined. You know, one of these people, they said they're going to do something, you know, they never miss, right? You know, and she lived in she had a little homestead out in the country, like pretty far from city, far from noise, complexities. She was off the grid, grew most of her own food. You know, she had this really, you know, idyllic life in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's very contemplative, spent time meditating. And, you know, she was listening to some talks, you know, actually it was a talk by Gill on letting go. And you know, she was like really good at letting go of attachment to physical sensations. You know, it's like, I'm hungry. No, I don't need that. Cold shower, no big deal, you know. So all those things were like really, really easy, you know. And then she went for a hike, and there's this low-flying airplane, you know, roaring, you know, through the beautiful unspoiled skies, and she got infuriated. You know, we talked about it, you know, and I said, well, you know, that's a place to look at, you know, that's clinging. She said, not that. And, you know, but I'm right, that's so wrong, you know. And I think that, you know, what are the parts in ourselves that are not that? You know, of course I got to get rid of that before I can get enlightened. You know, I got to fix that before. I've got to fix that before I can really relax. It doesn't matter what the object of clinging is. It's the clinging that's the issue. And the practice really calls us to include everything in our caring attention, but everything. You know, as I said, when we're climbing up the mountain, we don't leave our aching feet behind. You know, we bring it all with us. There's room on this path for every part of us, everything that we are, and everything we're not. You know, one of the, going back to my school time, you know, one of the things I've struggled with in meditation a lot was boredom. You know, and, you know, boredom was the one thing, you know, that I just, I have to meet that here also, you know. And, you know, freedom can be found right in the heart of boredom. Right in the heart of boredom. And if we allow that interest to touch it, to see what is it here, what's really going on in this boredom, what don't we like about it? What don't we like here? You know, and then our interest allows us to, you know, that to stop that pushing away of whatever it is, that little low stimulus state that's kind of unpleasant. We'd rather be angry than bored. We'd rather be, you know, fearful than bored sometimes, you know. And so we go deeper into it, deeper into it. You know, one of the many beliefs I worked with, you know, that really got in the way of my practice quite a bit was the belief that if I only stopped being insecure, then I'd be happy. You know, and that there's no way that in practice would ever fix me enough for me to not be insecure. Therefore, you know, it was, that really got in my way. You know, but we don't need to wait for freedom until we're no longer neurotic. It all deserves our caring attention. We can be fully here, being nobody and going nowhere. You know, and this path, you know, doesn't include a waiting room. Except for those people on Zoom. So I'd like to end with a poem by Ajahn Chah. Peace is to be found within oneself in the same place as agitation and suffering. It's not found in a forest or on a hilltop, nor is it given by a teacher. Where you experience suffering, you can also find freedom from suffering. Trying to run away from suffering is actually to run towards it. So thank you.